Welcome to Maine's Political Pulse. I'm Erwin Gratz. We're going to begin with a talk we're going to call Impeachment and a Tale of Two Maine Politicians. Joining me as usual, Maine Public's Chief Political Correspondent Mal Leary and State House Bureau Chief Steve Missler. Steve, let's start with that impeachment inquiry.
Sure. So since we spoke last week, it's really sort of chugging along. The pressure on the Trump administration is really increasing as House committees begin pursuing more information from the White House and the State Department. As more documents and texts and whatever are revealed, the State Department seems to be increasingly involved in this controversy. Anyway, those committees are searching for evidence that will confirm the allegation by a whistleblower that President Trump used his office to pressure Ukraine's president to dig up dirt on former Vice President Joe Biden and his son Hunter. That search for the evidence seems to have occurred right in public view during a press conference and then a president's comment from the White House lawn. But anyway, Trump continues to deny any impropriety. And as the week went on, did so in increasingly strident ways and held a objectively bonkers press conference with the president of Finland, used a profanity to describe the impeachment inquiry. And that's kind of where we are right now.
So, Mal, who are the two main politicians that are being most affected by all of this?
Well, the two, of course, are Senator Susan Collins, who, if there is an impeachment by the House, will be a juror as a member of the Senate to act on whatever those impeachment articles are. She's up for re-election next year, so that is like doubling the pressure on her on what would be a difficult situation anyway, even if she wasn't up for re-election. And then you have 2nd District Congressman Jared Golden. Now, Jared Golden, as you recall, barely won that seat while Donald Trump was taking the district, taking one of Maine's electoral votes. First time that has happened in terms of the ability to split off our electoral votes. That shows how popular he is in the 2nd District. Already we're seeing a bunch of Republicans jumping in the race to go against Golden because they think he's vulnerable. Now, historically, the first time a member of Congress is up for re-election, they are the most vulnerable. So there's some logic to what's going on here among the Republicans. And I think what you've got is Golden being very, very cautious in what he says. He doesn't like to say there's an inquiry underway. He wants to call it an investigation because he doesn't want to be perceived as supporting Speaker Pelosi's solo call for this inquiry. There has been no vote in the House of Representatives to start this process. It was done under the authority of the Speaker, where she ordered the inquiry to get underway. So he's trying to parse himself out of that problem. So basically, we have two politicians, one with a long history of Maine and one rising star, if you will, getting elected in the 2nd District, knocking off an incumbent Republican, that are both in jeopardy electorally because of this impeachment inquiry, investigation, whichever word you want to use.
The word impeachment for Jared Golden is basically kryptonite. He's trying to avoid saying it. You know, he's trying to avoid having anything to do with it. But at some point, he will have to, this thing moves forward as it appears to be doing, will have to take a vote. And so will Senator Collins, who has taken the tack that she's a juror and that, you know, she must sort of remain silent on these daily developments. But, she, you know, at some point, you know, both of them are going to have to weigh in. I've been reading a lot of history in the past couple of weeks about impeachment. There's a lot of comparisons to, obviously, the Nixon impeachment inquiry, which ended with his resignation, not actual removal from office. That began as a very unpopular endeavor. But the thing that tipped the scales was the revelations of the tapes, the secret recordings of the White House, which became the smoking gun. Now, arguably, in this case, the president is waving around a smoking gun from the White House lawn where he's inviting China to investigate Joe Biden. He's reiterating his call for the Ukrainian president to do the same. It's just in an amazing position. At some point, they're going to have to decide whether this conduct is okay. And if it's okay to ask for foreign governments to dig up dirt on political opponents, at its essence, that's what we're talking about here. And they'll have to make that choice. And how they make that choice and rationalize it will be something that voters will have to decide whether they agree with that.
And so far, there really is no sign, is there, that either Golden or Collins, at least in the last week, have been moved in their positions from anything that's been unfolding.
I think that's accurate, Irwin. I really do. And I think, you know, I mean, it's tougher to read Collins on this, I think. It's probably not even in her interest, you know, her own personal interest, to talk at length about this. She hasn't said much. Even if she doesn't say much all the way up until the end, at some point her vote will say something.
And also at the moment, they both of them are back home, correct? The Congress is in recess at the moment?
Well, somewhat back home. Somewhat. I mean, the reality is Senator Collins has been doing a lot of fundraising for a campaign she has not yet said she's going to involve herself in. That is her reelection. So she's been out in California, and I'm trying to remember, was it Kentucky?
I believe so, yeah. I think it was
where she's gone and is raising money from traditional Republican organizations. She's been in the state part of the recess, but she's also been out raising some money. She's here again over the weekend. I have not seen a schedule for next week, how much of that is going to be in-state and how much of that's going to be out raising money. I just don't know.
Yeah, it's just one of those things. Of course, sometimes when they're back in the state, they also have to face constituents who may or may not have questions about these very same issues. So,
and pesky reporters who force them to try to answer questions.
Yes. All right. Well, let's move on to another topic. Mainers are going to be asked to vote next month on a $105 million transportation bond issue. Now, like similar proposals in recent years, state officials say this bond has to pass if the state transportation department is to carry out all the road and bridge work that's needed to be done next year. But there's been increasing unease in Augusta over the necessity to rely on voters to close the gap in highway funding that seems to be growing. Now, let's start with some background on this. Now, for decades, Maine has relied on gas tax revenue to pay for road and bridge work. In fact, it goes into a separate fund, the highway fund. Figures do show there are more cars on the road. Nearly all of them are still fueled by gasoline. So I guess why does the state need all this extra bond money?
There are a lot of cars on the road. But I don't know about your car, Irwin, but mine gets a lot better gas mileage than the first car I had when I got out of college. Much better gas mileage. What we have here is we're getting better gas mileage from vehicles. So there's less money coming in for the gas tax on that front. The other front that is very serious one that causes a lot of heartburn in the Department of Transportation is the costs of rebuilding, the cost of asphalt that goes in the road, the cost of steel that goes into the bridges, all of those items that they need to buy to upgrade, repair, fix, or build new have all gone up in costs. So you have this lessening of money coming in and an increase in the costs of what the repairs are. As a result, for several years now, there has had to be a general fund bond issue in order to bail out that gap. And even with this additional money coming from a bond issue that the general taxes pay for as opposed to the highway taxes, you still have the gap growing. Right now, it's somewhere around $160 million worth of projects that they're behind on. This bond issue isn't going to catch up on that 160. It's just going to make the situation from getting any worse. So that's where the dilemma here is. Where do we come up with new revenue in order to pay for all this road reconstruction? Because the reality is, if you got an electric car, for example, it's going to contribute to the lessening of those roads and the need to repair them at some point. How do you get at that electric car, which is not paying any fuel tax? And that's one of the many issues this commission that the legislature created is looking into. What's interesting there, Irwin, is it's already breaking down into a political battle. They started off with a press conference. We're willing to look at anything and everything, tolls, taxes, whatever it takes to, you know, to close this gap. And it wasn't a couple of weeks later, the Republicans put out a press release saying, well, we're really upset that the only thing the governor's office put forward was a chart showing how much a new gas tax would raise. Whether this commission can come up with that silver bullet that solves this problem, you know, for decades to come is a real serious question. Do they have to do something? Well, if they don't, we're going to end up continuing to take money from the general fund through the use of a bond issue in order to pay for these roads, and we're still going to fall further behind.
And I would add to that, by continuing to do what we've been doing, you're subjecting Maine's infrastructure needs not only to increased borrowing needs and demands, but also the politics of authorizing that borrowing. We just saw that, where basically Republicans had all of the leverage in a bond package fight because all they wanted was a transportation bond. You know, Democrats wanted other things, you know, for Land for Maine's future, conservation, what have you. At the end of the day, you know, is it sustainable to have, you know, infrastructure projects sort of hinging on the political whims of elected leaders here on bond packages and by extension voters? I think voters are the least to worry about, because voters will almost always approve transportation bonds. They drive the roads. They know how terrible they are. But is that a sustainable way to fund infrastructure? Borrowing over and over and over again, even at low interest rates, they're not always going to be that way. And so that's a real tough nut to crack, I think, for all of them, particularly when you have partisan disagreements about how it should be done. I mean, let's not forget that, you know, back in 2011, that when Republicans took control of the legislature, full control, one of the very first things they did was freeze the indexing on the gas tax, which means it doesn't rise to the cost of inflation every year. And so that's another source, or that's another reason why gas tax revenues have gone down. It doesn't drive all of the decrease. I think some of the things that Mal was talking about, fuel efficient cars, electronic vehicles, et cetera.
It certainly helps that gap grow over time.
Absolutely. That's right. It just creates a structural gap, which is worsened by the other factors Mal pointed out.
The reality is, Erwin, if you take a look at that indexing, if indexing had been kept, there would have been an additional $150 to $160 million for roads just from the fuel tax. Now, it doesn't solve the problem, but it certainly would help.
We've touched on them very briefly, but are there any alternatives to the gas tax that show any sign of rising to the top here?
I haven't seen any proposals that have gained any traction here. I've seen proposals in other states that have gained some traction. I think it was Oregon that they attempted to do a method where cars would be monitored for road usage and then taxed accordingly.
By mileage, you know, in other words. That, yeah.
By mile. Yeah, exactly. Excuse me. Yeah, you're exactly right. But that raises all kinds of other concerns about privacy. Do you want the government tracking your, you know, where you're driving and how far, et cetera? I mean, I know that was a problem in Oregon. But at the end of the day, a lot of states are confronted with this issue. And a part of that is because the federal government hasn't stepped up and increased its funding of highways and bridges. But at the end of the day, this is a dilemma confronted by all states. And in Maine, it just happens to be one where we've attempted to solve it with bonding. Over time, you got to wonder if that's the right way to go, though, because, again, it's subject to politics, who's in power at the time.
There's a real fairness issue there, too. I mean, the folks that can afford it can go out and buy an electric car, and they're not paying any tax except the tax to register their car to ride around on the roads. So we've got this kind of policies that are going against each other, where we're encouraging people to buy electric cars. There are tax incentives to buy electric cars because of reducing the carbon footprint. But at the same time, those cars are not providing any sort of contribution to keeping the roads in shape. So there have been ideas, for example, of having a separate excise tax every year on an electric car to try to capture some of that money, put a tax on the electricity that is used to recharge the car. So there are some ideas floating out there, but nothing that has consolidated. And probably the one that I'm hearing most about is increasing tolling, that the federal government is now allowing the states to go in and put tolls on roads that were built mostly with federal money for that very reason, to try to capture some of that. Because if you're going through on the main turnpike, no matter what your car is being fueled by, you're paying a fee.
That's Maine's Political Pulse for this week. You can download new versions of The Pulse each Friday afternoon at 3. Willis Ryder Arnold is our producer. Music is by Rob Holt. I'm Erwin Gratz.